On May 6, 2013, Amanda Berry made worldwide headlines when she kicked and clawed her way out of a Cleveland home, called 911, and said, "Help me. I'm Amanda Berry. I've been kidnapped, and I've been missing for 10 years, and I'm here. I'm free now." So began one of the most remarkable criminal stories of recent times, with an author of A Ride, Ariel Castro, a local school bus driver with a history of domestic violence, separately lured Berry, Gina De Jesus, and Michelle Knight to his rundown West Cleveland home, where he kept them locked and chained in the basement. In the decade that followed, the three were repeatedly raped, psychologically abused, threatened with death, and often fed one meal a day. In the new book, Hope, a memoir of survival in Cleveland by Amanda Berry and Gina De Jesus, Pulitzer Prize-winning Washington Post reporters Mary Jordan and Kevin Sullivan interweave the events within Castro's house with original reporting on efforts to find the missing girls. The book is now number one on the New York Times bestseller list. Mary and Kevin, a husband and wife team, report from Mexico for the Washington Post. They won the 2003 Pulitzer Prize for international reporting for stories about the lack of rule of law in Mexico and the horrific conditions in the Mexican criminal justice system. It's a great pleasure to welcome Mary and Kevin to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
What brought you to this particular story and wanting to work with Amanda and Gina in telling their story, and not only telling their story, but also reporting on this as well?
Well, I'm from the same part of town, Cleveland, as Amanda Berry. And when we heard this, like everyone around the world, it was just, what? This is my town. This happened to them. And some people put us together to see if we could help Amanda and Gina tell their story. And we all got along very well, and it was great. And we began a conversation that led to the book that lasted hundreds and hundreds of hours. And greatly aided, we found out to our delight that Amanda Berry had kept a diary inside. And so we were sitting in her bedroom one day and talking to her, and she went into the closet and she took out this bag that had FBI evidence bag on it. And inside were napkins and McDonald's bags, any little scrap of paper that she could write down in detail what had been happening day by day inside the house.
At what point did she start to keep the diary?
The first entry is about a week after she's taken, and a lot of them take the forms of letters to her mother. You know, she was very close with her mom, and so she would write, you know, "Dear Mom, I'm still here." She had to be very careful because Castro had rules about what she could and couldn't write in the diary, and he would look at it periodically. Why he didn't destroy the thing, we'll never know, but he let her keep it. But in the 1,200 pages of diaries that she kept, the words Ariel and Castro never appear. He told her, never write my name, never write the address here, never write anything specific. So she wrote in a shorthand, in a code. You know, she marked down with little X's each time that she was abused by him, because she said, someday I want there to be a record. I want him to be held accountable.
And did you, in a way, was she chronicling both her experience and Gina's experience, or was it also, I mean, obviously they're the same in many cases, but also was she just being personal to how she was feeling as well?
There's both. You know, Ariel Castro divided three girls and actually tried to manipulate and lie to them. So he would say to Amanda, for instance, "You know the rules. You're not supposed to make any noise." And Gina said that you were. "So you're not going to get food tonight, or I'm going to take your radio away because you broke the rules because she told on you." It was brilliant, master manipulation on his part so that the girls would never get together and beat up on him. And he also kept them separate. He chained them in separate places in the house. But when Amanda would write, she would often say, like, it's Easter, and Gina has became a sewer inside. He would go to yard sales and buy things for 50 cents and bring them in, and he gave a needle and thread to Gina, and she used to make some clothes for them. So she would tell us, or she would say, she would write, "Gina is so depressed today, she won't get out of bed. I have to go and try to tell her, please get up. Please get up. You've got to get up. We've got to outlast him. So we did learn not just her story, but other things that were going on in the house.
This is a question, I guess, for both of you, but is it possible, even after spending so much time, to understand or try to even figure out how these women came out of this situation with any hope at all?
It's a good question. I think they would cling to, you know, the book is called Hope for a Reason. They always looked for reasons to be hopeful. In fact, one of the things that they did in the house was that they just wrote the word hope over and over and over again on whatever pieces of paper they could find. So I think by doing that, they tried to focus on things that made them happy. Amanda, for a long time, would write these letters to her mom, and she focused all of her attention on her mom and getting back to her. And then, you know, very tragically, her mom died while she was in there, and she saw it on television, and her mother never knew that Amanda was still alive. And very shortly after that, she became pregnant and gave birth to a child 9 months later. And that child then became the focus of her life, the thing that she really clung to, the thing that that gave her this hope. And the baby was born on Christmas Day, and she always said, you know, this is a Christmas miracle. It's a gift from my mother.
When I guess my question is somewhat procedural, but as reporters, at what point do you get a sense that these women are ready to talk and to dredge up some of this?
Well, it's a great question, and we spent an enormous amount of time with them, weeks and weeks, that actually grew into months, because they weren't ready. They might want to say a little bit, but they didn't really want to go further. Gina particularly, it was about 7 months of talking to her, going roller skating. That was what she loved to do, or going for a walk in a park, going out to get ice cream. And finally, she was ready, and we didn't want to push her. It did take a while. But when they started talking about it, they said it was, in the end, quite therapeutic, because they had not even told their family the detail of what had happened, and it was important for them to get it out.
Was it your intention to have Michelle Knight a part of the project as well?
Yes. Originally, we had hoped that all three would do it together, and Amanda and Gina had asked her. But, you know, Michelle was just able to talk more publicly. She was the only one who went to the courtroom to face Ariel Castro. She was older, and she decided to go ahead and do her own book, and she's done some other projects, and she's been out publicly talking for over a year. Amanda and Gina, it just took them a bit longer. They couldn't face the cameras, and this book is the very first time that they're telling their story.
In telling the story, what can we learn from it, in the sense of about how we look for people who are missing, of how a situation like this can happen in the first place? A decade. I mean, that's the thing, right? A decade. It's hard.
Well, the police have tried to draw lessons from this. Obviously, the police and the FBI, they failed here. They didn't find these women, but it wasn't for lack of trying. They chased down hundreds of leads, and they, you know, some of them were crazy things, but it took a long time. It took a lot of man hours to try to track these things down. So, you know, it's very easy in hindsight to turn around and say they should have found them, but you know, in real time, it was very, very difficult.
And I think it does, you know, it's helped with some of the cold cases, because a lot of people thought they were dead. It was so many years had been passed since they were abducted. And many police and the FBI have said that they're going back through these cases because there is a chance that somewhere many of these missing kids are still alive.
When they think of I guess the question is, and you keep... they allude to much of the book is them telling the story of what happened, but also, you know, moving on. And I'm curious as to, you know, what is next for three women who've been through such a traumatic ordeal, and we're just talking about your life and trying to come to terms with it is something that you can, you know, that takes just to get the story out to you two takes so much. At what point do you think, if ever, that you live a normal life?
Well, I don't think you can ever, I don't think anyone could go through something like this and not be scarred and not have things that they're going to have to be dealing with for the rest of their lives, and they're getting the help that they need, but they're doing incredibly well. You know, they're both, Amanda and her daughter live in a house where her sister and brother-in-law and their three kids live upstairs, so she's back surrounded by family, and they're very supportive and very loving, and Gina is back home with her family. They both feel safe, really, for the first time in 10 years, and they're trying to get their high school diplomas. Gina's had a little job working in a restaurant. They've both gotten their driver's license. You know, just like bit by bit, they're trying to build a normal life for themselves.
When they got out, they were, wow, you know, people are talking about this thing called Facebook and Twitter. They were amazed by all the things that had happened. When they went inside, there were payphones, and when they came out, everyone had this thing called a smartphone. And so in time, it's taken a little while to adjust to 2015, basically, but the real amazing news here is that they're young, they're pretty darn happy, and they have a great life ahead of them.
And the relationship is close with one another?
Yeah, they're very close. They see each other a lot. They do a lot of things together, and Gina's sort of like an aunt to Amanda's daughter, and they're very close.
The name of the book is Hope, A Memoir of Survival in Cleveland. Amanda Berry and Gina De Jesus with Mary Jordan and Kevin Sullivan, who joined us this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Again, the title of the book, Hope, A Memoir of Survival in Cleveland. It's published by Viking. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.